This is Pastor Dean Proctor from Queensway Baptist Church in Brantford, Ontario, Canada. You're listening to a podcast of one of our latest sermons. At Queensway, we seek to impact lives for Jesus in this generation and in generations to come. As you listen to this podcast, we trust you'll be blessed. So if you're visiting with us this morning, just to bring you quickly up to speed, we are on week three of a series called You Asked For It. This is what folks have submitted questions that they've wrestled with and want to see some answers to. This one happens to be about the end times. So the big million-dollar church word for the end times of the last day's study is eschatology. Eschatology. There won't be a quiz. I'm just telling you. It's eschatology. And back in the spring, I think I was talking about actually the demonic at that point, and I was saying that there are two equal dangerous positions. It's actually a quote from C.S. Lewis, that you can, as it relates to the demonic, you can be way over interested in it, or you can be completely uninformed on it, too much or too little. And the reality is that with any talk of end times or the last days, the same thing happens. And as I studied this question that I'm about to share with you, it became clear that there are two equal camps, equal extremes with regards to how the world is going to end, what it's going to look like. The first camp is called eschatomania. It's a great word. That one there will be a quiz on. Eschatomania. Eschatomania is that extreme where a person sees everything but everything through the eyes of prophecy. And they've got like the Bible in this hand, and they've got the expositor in this hand, and they're like reading everything together, like it all fulfills, one fulfills the other, and every possible thing that ever happens is because of a prophecy, and we knew Trump was going to do that because it says here in the Bible. The Left Behind series of books that lay out a perspective on the end times has really kind of stirred that up. But this whole thinking, this extreme thinking on one end with regards to the last days, actually came out in 1970 with a book called The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. And that's what kind of started this, everything being seen through that lens. But then there's the other extreme, eschatophobia. And this is the camp that doesn't want to talk about any of that stuff. Don't bring it up. Don't preach from Revelation. Don't invite me to your Revelation Bible study. Don't talk to me about prophecy. I don't get it. I'm a little uncomfortable with the imagery. Let's just pretend that part's not there and go back to John 3:16 with me. Those people are not, you know, and that may describe you. Those people aren't unbiblical. Those people aren't heretics. It's just that is hard stuff. And personally for them, they would rather just kind of leave it there and we'll deal with doctrine that I can understand and that is perhaps a little more comfortable for me. And I think somewhere in the middle is where we want to land on this, where we want to be informed enough but not completely wrapped up being so heavenly minded we're no earthly good, as the saying says. So the question you can probably guess for today was one about the last days, one about the end times. And it was a two-part question, which I really liked because it kind of gave a broader look at these last days questions. The first half of the question was this: are we in the last days? And the second part was, are we the Laodicean church? Who? Are we in the last days, and are we the Laodicean church? So I'm going to deal with those one at a time. Let's deal with the first question. Are we in the last days? And I would say, relatively speaking, yes. I mean, chronologically speaking, are we closer to the end than we've ever been every day? Yes. So in that sense, relatively speaking, yeah, we're proceeding toward the last days. But I say relatively because these are the same types of questions that were being asked as Jesus walked the earth 2 millennia ago. One of those events is found in Matthew chapter 24. And what's happening here is that the disciples are grilling Jesus about the last days. They want to know how it's going to unfold, when it's going to happen, what should they be looking for? And so Jesus hears them, and they might as well have been asking this question. Jesus, are we in the last days? And in verse 36 of Matthew 24, Jesus says, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. Now, Jesus, the Son, always submissive to the will of the Father. So when he's asked, when is this all going to happen, Jesus? When are you going to bring in your kingdom fully? And Jesus says, I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Father knows. That's just about it. And what he's saying with that is, and don't act like you know, because no one knows. Only the Father knows. Don't listen to anyone who acts like they know the precise details and exact timeline regarding the day of the Lord, because they don't know. Only the Father knows. And in his humanity as he walked the earth, even Jesus didn't know that. And now, having ascended, following the resurrection, taken his rightful place fully within the Trinity again, I'm sure he does know now. But in his humanity as he walked the earth at the time that he was asked this question, only the Father knew. He could say, I don't know. What we can know, though, is the kind of parable-like language that Jesus taught in on this topic. A couple of particular parables. One is about the surprise arrival of a landowner finding what the people were doing that he'd left in control. The second was the description of a thief who breaks in the night. See, both of those are events involving the unexpected, unplanned, unscheduled, you need to be ready, it could happen at any time kind of thinking. Readiness is actually what Jesus is teaching there. So we ought not be burdened with when Jesus will return specifically, but rather to be ready for his return imminently, however that happens at the time that it happens. So what is going to happen at that unexpected, unannounced time? Exactly what God wants to happen. Because if you're waiting for me to say, well, that's the day that the rapture happens, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that, because there's been no universal agreement on how that's going to unfold when the Lord returns. Because some come away from that same chapter in Matthew 24, with an image that on that day, the true believers will poof, disappear. Two will be in bed and one is gone. Two will be spinning or grinding and one is gone. And certainly the Left Behind series adheres to that kind of thinking. Poof, rapture, gone, everybody's gone. But others come away from, like 1 Thessalonians 4:17, convinced as the Apostle Paul was, that the true believers are going to be reunited with Jesus after having been taken up into the air. Right? We heard, which I did not plan this morning, but we heard in the lectionary reading that Grace did, that passage where Paul says to Timothy, I know whom I have believed. And there's an old hymn to that title that many of you will know. And one of the verses goes this way. I know not when my Lord may come, at night or noonday fair, nor if I'll walk the veil with him or meet him in the air. So what I really want to highlight this morning about this is not that one of those positions is more right or more biblical, because they're both biblical. On that day, what I want to highlight is that whenever it happens, however it happens, the true believers who choose Christ today will be united with Jesus under the watchful and eternal plan of God. And that's something I can rest comfortably with. I know in whom I have believed. That I do know. And he is able. And so, to answer that first half of that question, are we in the last days? Yeah, we're closer to the end than we've ever been. I wish we could really flesh out a lot more on this, but I want to encourage you on Right Now Media to have a look at this curriculum that just came out, The Nonprofit's Guide to the End Times. Bible Prophecy 101, six sessions, and that's available on Right Now Media right now. So you can kind of dig a whole lot deeper at a language that everyone can understand. The second half of the question today, are we the Church of Laodicea? As I chose to understand the question, it wasn't, is Queensway the Church of Laodicea? Are we the Church of Laodicea? That's not how I tackled the question, but rather, is the church today, especially the North American Western Church, demonstrating that it is the Church of Laodicea? Well, why would that be? See, the question is rooted in a stream of thought that divides up the era of the Christian church from its inception to now. It divides it up into seven pieces, and each of those pieces are what was actually being addressed in those letters to the churches in Revelation. So from 70 AD to 170 AD, the church of Ephesus, the letter says, you've lost your first love. That was for the church at that time, according to this line of thinking called dispensationalism. The second church, same thing, from 170 to 312 AD. That was the church of Smyrna, according to that line of thinking. And all the way up to the church of Laodicea, the final church addressed in these seven letters. And that thinking says that starting in 1901 until now, we're in the Laodicean dispensation. We are representative of the Laodicean church, and that the issues addressed to the Laodiceans in the letter to them in Revelation 3:14 is actually addressing issues in the church itself. And I don't go there. I've been to the locations of the seven churches. They're real places, you know, in real cities with real churches that were filled with real people that had real issues. And so to drape a whole new significance and meaning on top of that is, I think, unnecessary. But what's behind the question? Why? What over the last 118 years of the Christian church, specifically in the West and in North America, would cause someone to ask, are we the Church of Laodicea? Yeah. Laodicea is a city in Turkey. Yeah, one of the seven churches in Revelation chapter 3. Great question, thank you. When we consider this letter and who it was addressed to and what was being addressed, we learn a lot about this church. It was condemned for being lukewarm. Not any of the extremes, not extreme hot, not extreme cold, just sort of, you know, there, lukewarm. See, my problem with applying additional meaning to that is that it misses what I think is a brilliant point in this letter, the lukewarmness piece. That there's two aqueducts that ran into Laodicea. One was pure hot, one was pure cold. They merged outside of the city. And so by the time they came in the one aqueduct, they were neither hot nor cold. Right? So the significance is there because it's real history. And now to take that and go, oh, that applies to the church in 2019, I think is a stretch. I don't think it works that way. But let's talk about Laodicea a little more. A self-focused church, a comfortable church, a skewed sense of identity. They're chided in the letter for acting as though they were rich. Now, outwardly, they were. But inwardly, Jesus was looking at the poverty of their hearts. They weren't rich, spiritually speaking. And it's ironic, the Church of Laodicea was not worried about meeting budgets. They weren't burdened with debt. The problem with Laodicea is that they were burdened with wealth. They had the disease called affluenza. It caused them to be lazy and sluggish and lethargic about ministry. What's the rush? What's the panic? But this is the part of that letter that is startling. Revelation 3:20, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And for years in church basements, there's been that picture of Jesus in the garden with a lamp knocking on a door, and there's no handle on the door, right, because it has to be open from the inside. And we've used that to say, well, that's actually, you know, that's about the believer, the sinner, opening their heart to Jesus. That's what it means to be saved. He's standing at the door and knocking at the door of your life, and you need to let him in, except that's not at all what it means. Jesus is saying this to the church. He's saying this to the believers in Laodicea. Hey, I'm on the outside looking in. Can I come in and actually be part of the things that you're doing? That is startling. that the church would still be functioning, that the church would still be gathering, that it would be serving and doing all kinds of things and presumably meeting and studying, and Jesus wasn't part of any of it. Stunning. And that may sound like churches you know in the last 118 years. It may sound like churches you know today. But these words are spoken to those churches who have realigned their priorities, and Jesus just doesn't fit anymore. That narrow, exclusive message that he brings, it's just not cool anymore. And so Jesus is sort of just kind of put to the side in favor of something that we can all agree on. And there he is, standing at the door, knocking. So this is why you hear me hammering about the things we do here as a church, about the centrality of Jesus, the centrality of the gospel, because I don't want to do anything, even if I did believe in dispensationalism, to resemble the church of Laodicea. I don't want to be the leader that does that. But I also feel the same about the other six churches and the content of those letters. I don't want to lose our first love the way Ephesus did. I don't want to be like Pergamum that let immorality and sin go unaddressed. I don't want to be like Thyatira, who was afraid to challenge the powerful people and the loud voices in the church. Or Sardis, who was just happy to celebrate what they used to do. But I think all of those traits and others can be seen in a variety of ways in today's Christian church. And that's why when I'm asked a question like, are we the church of Laodicea? I say, no, that's not how that works. But I see traits that connect. I see apostate gatherings, drifting churches following alternate gospels and to their own comfort. Jesus said, we're actually supposed to take up our cross and follow him, to die to oneself, as we sang, to surely live. The true church is not going to shrink back from those truths. The true church needs to be ready for the return of the king, because he could come back at any time, and that we need to be prepared for and ready for.